Welcome to Family Talk.
Well, hello, everyone. I'm James Dobson for Family Talk. And before we begin today's program, I want to take just a moment to congratulate my great friend Phyllis Schlafly on receiving a highly prestigious award. This Wednesday, February 25th, 2015, the Wyrick Awards Dinner will be celebrating the achievements and legacy of Phyllis Schlafly, as well as the 50th anniversary of her milestone book, A Choice, Not an Echo. That book had a tremendous impact on this culture. And I would like to personally congratulate Phyllis on this prestigious award and wish her God's blessings as she continues fighting to defend the American family. Now let's get on to today's program, which features Phyllis Schlafly on this special edition of Family Talk.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk. I'm Ryan Dobson with our host, psychologist and best-selling author, Dr. James Dobson, and our co-host and physician-in-residence, Dr. Meg Meeker. And today we're going to talk with one of the most knowledgeable and influential people in the pro-family movement, and someone that's been your friend for more than 30 years, Dad.
Well, Ryan, there are very few people in this country whom I respect more highly than I do Mrs. Phyllis Schlafly. I've known her for a long, long time. We've been colleagues. We've stood shoulder to shoulder. I don't ever remember an issue that we disagreed with because we're coming from the same value system. And I consider her to be one of the most articulate defenders of conservative thought and principles today. She has written more than 20 books. In fact, I think I've interviewed her on most of them. And she's a syndicated radio personality and a commentator on radio and television. She has such influence. She has a column that can be read in more than 100 newspapers. She's also been writing a monthly newsletter since 1967 called the Phyllis Schlafly Report. I mean, we could take the whole program just to talk about the things that Phyllis Schlafly has done. And it is such a pleasure to have her with us by telephone today. And Dr. Meeker, you're here by telephone as well. So we're trying to patch all this together. Phyllis, thank you for being
with
us today.
Thank you, Dr. Dobson. It really is an honor to be on your program, and I've been your fan ever since I first visited you when you were in that little place that you started out in Southern California. Was it San Diego? Or
I don't remember. All I know is that you've been my guest many times, and every time you have, you've had something unique to say about the institution of the family.
Well, the problem we have today, and you've read it in all of the reports, is the decline in the number of people who are married. It's just a very shrinking percentage. You and I grew up in a world where we had what was called nuclear families. That is a family of a mother and father who were married to each other and raising their children in one household. And now the number of people who are living in that type of a family is just shrinking.
Yeah. Well, you have written a new book about that. The title of it is Who Killed the American Family? I wish I had written it. Somebody should have a long time ago, because the history of this foundational institution is just breathtaking when you look at the concerted effort to tear it down, to weaken it, to redefine it. And that's why there is a statement on the cover of your new book that is written by an obscure guy named James Dobson. And my board will not allow me to endorse books or organizations or any of those things, but I can certainly make a comment about the people involved in them. And I did that with regard to what you have written here. And I said, Phyllis Schlafly has represented an unwavering voice of reason about marriage, parenthood, and the defense of righteousness and conservative thought. That, in two lines, explains what I think of you, Phyllis, and the contribution that you've made. I would hate to see what would have happened in this country if it hadn't been for your taking a stand early and often alone, I might say, going back to the ERA. I wonder if anybody remembers the Equal Rights Amendment. You personally defended the traditional values and defeated the ERA. It was unbelievable. I was not yet on the scene, but I was watching you from a distance and later had the opportunity to work with you.
So, well, we did show that the grassroots can rise up and overcome the whole establishment because we had everybody against us. And we showed that it is possible to beat them all. And we are terribly concerned with the shrinkage in the number of the American family. You know, we've poured billions of dollars into the public school system. And for many years, they've been telling us that the reason for the gap between the high-achieving and the low-achieving kids was poverty. And now the latest information is it really isn't poverty. It's whether or not the kids live in a household with a married mother and father.
Yeah.
And that's what causes the difference in the gap between the high achievers and the low achievers.
Let's look at your title again, Who Killed the American Family? Is it dying or is it dead? Is this prophetic or is this history?
No, it's not dying. It's people who are killing it. And I have six different chapters of the various kinds of people who found it in their interest to kill the American people. For example, everybody who believes in big government would like to get rid of the family because the traditional family is an economic unit. They earn their own money. They spend their own money the way they want to. I grew up during the Great Depression, and the families were intact then. But then when you break up the family, when you encourage illegitimacy, then you find that the mother who's trying to support her babies is going to turn to big brother government. Right. And that's how government grows.
Mm-hmm. But where did this assault on the integrity of the family come from? Where did it begin? Was there a design? Was there a grand plan to do this? Or has it just happened?
Well, part of it just happened. For example, when Lyndon Johnson started his war on poverty, he thought, I guess, that he was doing a good thing. But when the decision was made to funnel all the money through the woman, the mother, that made the father irrelevant. Mm-hmm. And Dr. Dobson, you know, men have to have a purpose. They have to have a mission in life.
That's right.
And if you take away their mission of being the provider and protector of the ones they love, they're going to sashay on down the street and have fun somewhere else.
Right.
To Ryan and Dr. Meeker, let me say that because of my respect for Phyllis Lafley and my relationship with her, and I lived through many of the things she talks about in this book, you're going to have a hard time getting into the conversation.
You know what?
Today.
I understand.
Well, I'll just interrupt.
It's okay. I am so fascinated by this. Miss Lafley has been in this field for so long that I am just gaining an infinite amount of wisdom throughout this. And I've been studying a little bit of it, and it feels like we're on a track that we can't get off of. I hope we can, because the family is so important.
It's critical.
It is critical to our survival. Without that, we have nothing.
Yes, when I wrote this book, nobody has pointed out who are the people who've been attacking the family. Who are the people who are trying to get rid of it? And one group is the feminists, and they think that men are not necessary. They'd like to get rid of them.
Yeah.
And they have been very effective in controlling the Obama administration and in controlling the media and academia.
Dr. Meeker, get into the discussion
here. Yeah, this is just great because I remember hearing about Phyllis when I was in college. I was at an all-women's college in the 70s, and I remember hearing her taking on the fight against ERA. And I was so intrigued and grateful because I was hearing the other side of the story, of course, in all women's college. And what I have seen happen is feminism took hold and gained momentum, and the sexual revolution gained hold and took momentum. The two sort of worked together to really champion women and women's rights, but even more than that, you know, we pushed men into what I call orbit. You know, we just sort of tossed them out of the families and then became profoundly egocentric. We want what we want at any cost. Get out of our way. And then what I saw is the media taking off and capitalizing on that, on both the sexual revolution and the feminist movement. And I see them both spiraling completely out of control, because I agree with you. If we can't get our men back into our homes, we can't restore the family.
No, we need them. But the feminists really were not for equality anyway. They were for interchangeability.
Mm.
And,
yes.
We don't need to go into it, but you see all this nuttiness that's going on now about pretending that there really isn't any gender difference between male and female. You know, I had three sons first, and then I had a daughter, and I thought I had an invalid. All she did was lie there in the cradle. She didn't thrash around like all the boys did. They're different from the beginning.
Absolutely. Right. And because of that difference, Ms. Schlafly, it feels like the agenda to have same-sex marriage is saying that really neither parent matters. It doesn't matter if you have moms or dads. It's just that you have parents in general. Can you talk to that a little bit?
Yes. And the feminists have taken control, and they have done so many things to attack men and the mission of men and the purpose of men and the need for men. And it's really been very insulting to men. And then the next chapter I have in the book is about the various laws that have been attacking the marriage. And I've already referred to the welfare law that funneled all the money through the woman, which was a mistake. But then the easy divorce is another law mm-hmm. that was very hurtful yeah. to marriage. Mm-hmm. And they call it no fault, but that really mm-hmm. isn't the right name. It should be called unilateral divorce. Either spouse can just say, I'm out of here, and no reason.
Right.
And, you know, most of the divorces now are initiated by women, and they just think marriage is not necessary, and that's been a real attack on marriage.
Phyllis, it was, of all people, Ronald Reagan in California as governor who really allowed that
yes,
no-fault mm-hmm. divorce law.
He signed the first divorce law.
He
and then
said it was the worst thing he did in his entire public life.
That's mm-hmm. correct. And it swept across the country like wildfire. Mm. And, of course, I think at the start we thought, well, that was going to enable men to just cast off their overweight wife and get a new wife goodness. Who was younger and cuter but anyway, it now turns out that it's mostly women walking away from marriage.
Mm-hmm.
They are the ones.
Well, that was just sort of the beginning. That was in 1969, and like you say, it spread across the country and has become the law of the land. We fought it early on, but it's so established now. I don't know, is there hope for reversing that initiative?
Well, I think, and I hope that the pastors of all denominations are going to wake up to this problem. And I hope that people listening to this program will get a book and give it to your pastor, because the thing that's been so disappointing to me is with the collapse of traditional marriage, where are the churches? And yeah. I blame all the denominations. They ought to be preaching about this all the time and waking up people to what's going on.
I couldn't agree with you more. In fact, you know, it was so sad. I heard a pastor recently say that their church wasn't a quote-unquote marriage church. And I thought, well, that's the foundation of this. That's the relationship. How can you not be a marriage church? You need to support marriage, and you need to support healthy marriages.
It came out of the Garden of Eden.
Yeah, that's right.
Now, this is the Creator's perspective.
That's right. Yeah.
The
first relationship was man to God, and the second was man and wife.
What's a non-marriage church?
I don't have any idea. It's shocked me so much. I just sat there in silence. I thought, I don't know what that means. You know, it's just, it was kind of, you know, we're not the church that does marriage conferences, and we're not going to talk about same-sex marriage, and we're not going to talk about traditional. It's that whole, we want to accept everybody, which means you're excluding the people that believe in traditional marriage. Mm-hmm. When you say we're not going to talk about it, what you're saying is we're embarrassed of your traditional marriage. We don't really believe in it. And so we're going to ignore you and marginalize you in favor of what this norm is of that anything goes.
Well, I think the pastors are afraid of the feminists attacking them. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it isn't normal for men to fight women. And when the feminists come in and attack them for criticizing any of the feminist doctrines, the pastor doesn't know what to do. I urge them all to set up a committee of three or four women to run interference for them and to protect them against the attacks of the feminists. You know, they use the argument of inevitability and discrimination. Those are their two weapons. And they're both phony as a $3 bill, but at any rate, that's the way they bamboozle their way in churches and with politicians.
Hey, Phyllis, let's take another look at the history of this effort to destroy the family. We've talked often about the redefinition of the family that was brought by the homosexual movement. It was actually Jimmy Carter in the 1970s that, as far as I know, first began redefining what a family is.
Yes, that's right. When Jimmy Carter was going to have a White House conference on the family, the feminists made him change the title to families in the plural so they could talk about different kinds of families. Uh-huh. And at that time, they were trying to talk about same-sex marriages and I don't know, illegitimacy and so forth. Any other way, people who wanted to live together could be called a family.
You know, speaking personally again, in the 1970s, I was at USC School of Medicine, and I left there because I saw what was happening to the institution, the family, and felt like I ought to do something to defend it. So in 1977, I left there and started a new organization and called Focus on the Family. And that was a period of learning for me because I was out there, was not directly involved in the struggle at that time, but I was listening to you and I was listening to a lot of other people. And there was something, you know, I think I've shared this before. There was something that occurred called the International Conference on Women. And you were not even allowed to speak at that conference. It was a federal program Jimmy Carter had initiated. It was in Houston, Texas. Am I remembering all this right?
Yes, that's right. And that's when they passed resolutions for their four hot-button issues. And as I remember, they were passage of the Equal Rights Amendment, abortion funded by the taxpayers.
It was child care.
Child care. Oh, yes, because the feminists think the care of small children is demeaning for an educated woman, and you have to hire somebody else to do that. In fact, you have to have the government take it over.
I remember it cost $3 million. And
of course, the fourth one was same-sex marriage.
Okay.
Back in the 70s.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, I watched it and I was irritated by it because of all the radical feminists who were there speaking, Gloria Steinem and, man, I could take
everyone you ever heard of.
And they were all there and you were not allowed to speak. You had to hold your own conference a few blocks away. Is that correct?
That is correct.
All right. So, see, I was paying attention to you way back then. And that was 1977, 78. And then the next thing that happened is we heard that there was going to be a White House conference on the family. And I said, not this time, sir. And I went on the air. I didn't even know how many people were out there. I went on the air and I said, if you would like me to represent your point of view, which will probably be very different than what we have heard, please let them know. James Guy Tucker was Jimmy Carter's executive director of the new idea of having a conference on the family. Next thing I know, it's conferences on the family. And as a result of my going on the air and telling people about that, James Guy Tucker got 80,000 letters asking that I be appointed. It scared him half to death. He certainly didn't want anybody on this program that would have an agenda, and he turned me down, and people kept hammering him. And so finally I was appointed. So I was part of that. And one of my early complaints was that it was titled Families and not The Family. So,
That's what the feminists forced them to do.
Yep.
Yeah,
that's
I think Gloria Steinem did that, didn't she?
Right.
All right, so the attack on the family has been going on for a long time. And we could take days to describe each of these steps along the way. But let's bring it up to date now and talk about where we are now. We're still seeing this same phenomenon, aren't we?
Well, we certainly are. And in my book, Who Killed the American Family, I describe the different groups that have made it their business to try to attack the family. And one of the most important is the family courts. Now, let me explain about this. We've had an expression that has come to us from British law called the best interest of the child. It was codified, I don't know, a couple of centuries ago by some English lawyer. And what it meant, and what everybody understood it to mean, was that the kid's natural parents, his biological parents, are the ones best situated to decide what is in the best interest of their own children. And everybody accepted that. But it was in the 1970s, under the influence of the feminists and other left-wingers, that the meaning of that term got changed. And the definition, the best interest, was transferred to the judges of the family courts. So now it is the judge who decides in all cases what is in the best interest of the child, and he can second guess any decision made by the parents, even a decision that both parents have agreed to.
And I'd like to add to that, if you will, you know, a lot of these judges hear cases over and over and over, and they become very desensitized and numb. They look at the kids and they look at the family, and they don't make good decisions on behalf of the child. It comes out of their own bias, and they're very, very jaded over time.
Yes, that's very true. And, of course, we pride ourselves on being a government that believes in law. But there is no law that says what is in the best interest. So the judge is just doing it by the seat of his pants, whatever his inclination is.
Yes.
For example, we had one case recently where the judge decided what church the children would go to. Now, what, we live in Afghanistan? How do they get the authority to do that? But it's because the society has kind of given the judge the right to define what is the best interest of the child. Many of them, I'll say the, probably the majority of them, are very much opposed to homeschooling. And so, again and again, they are ordering the children of divorced parents to go to a public school and not be homeschooled. See, the only way they get into it is when, once you have the marriage breakup and you're looking for divorce, then you come into the family court, and then the judge has total control. He can decide how many hours a day you can see your own child, what school the kid has to go to, how you spend your money, every detail.
Well, we're talking to Mrs. Phyllis Schlafly, a longtime friend and one of the most articulate voices in defense of the family. And now she has written this wonderful new book that I strongly recommend, entitled Who Killed the American Family. And what she's done here, as you've been hearing, is provide a history of the deliberate effort to destroy the institution of marriage and change the understanding of parenting and really undermine what I would consider to be conservative principles and values that are based on righteousness. Phyllis, thank you for being with us, and we'll talk again next time more about your book and the work you're doing. You're writing something else right now, aren't you?
Yes, it's the 50th anniversary extension of A Choice, Not an Echo.
Hey, you know what? I would like to start our program next time talking about that book because it really laid the foundation for everything you've written since. Thank you for being with us. And Dr. Meeker, thank you. And
Thank you, Ryan. And thank you, Dr. Dobson.
And thank you.
Absolutely. For those that would like more information about Phyllis Schlafly and her book, Who Killed the American Family, visit our website, drjamesdobson.org, or call us at 877-732-6825. God bless, and we'll see you next time with more of Phyllis Schlafly on Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk.
Family Talk is not associated with Focus on the Family.